What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome back for another edition of the Hawkeye Nation Mailbag Podcast. I am your host, Rob Howe, publisher of HawkeyeNation.com. Haven't done one of these in a few weeks. I think I've thrown the line out there maybe last week or the week before. It just seemed like wasn't a lot to be asked at that time, where it seems like we've been in a holding pattern here for most of the summer as it relates to the Iowa football investigation. Big Ten schedule, what the fall is going to look like, this COVID, you know, how that's going to further affect what the season's going to look like. We've already gotten to the point where it's a conference-only schedule for Iowa, so no Cy-Hawk game this year, no matchup with Northern Iowa. So people have kind of wrapped their minds around that. And so there hasn't been a ton to talk about, really. Everybody's kind of just waiting to see what happens here. And we're Wednesday, July the 29th. It feels like June. It feels like March still. It's July the 29th, my wife's birthday. Happy birthday to my wife, Catherine. She allowed me some time to do the podcast after we had a family lunch in her honor. It is Wednesday, July the 29th, 2020. It's about 4:11 in the afternoon, a little later than I usually record these, and that's for good reason, because I fade as the day goes on, especially as I get older. Once it hits like 6-7 o'clock at night, I'm looking to have a beer and just kind of unwind. So forgive me if I'm not my energetic self, my normally energetic self today. So let's jump right into the questions. Let's start, Let's start on Twitter today. And Alec Ahmed Johnson asks, any word on when, and we've talked about the schedule, any word on when an updated schedule will be released? If another Big Ten game gets added, any idea who that might be? We had another scheduling question here as well. I might be able to tie that in. Rod Alger also asked, since we are only playing conference games this football season, has there been any announcement on what the schedule will be? So both of you guys had basically the same question, and no, we do not know yet. As of right now, let me check my email just in case I may have missed it. Nope, nothing yet. So you're probably looking at least tomorrow, which would be July the 30th. So we're almost to August. Camp will open a week, or scheduled to open a week from this Friday, August 7th, and there's still not a schedule yet, but we're just, we're living in some unusual times now, so I don't envy a lot of the administrators at the conference level, you know, at the university level, trying to come together and put together the best schedule here. I've heard different scenarios here that Iowa, the Big Ten wants to add a 10th game. I think that's probably likely. Earlier today, we heard from the ACC that they released their schedule, at least their conference schedule of 9 games, and then they're allowing for a non-conference game. And for those that are familiar with that, the ACC, SEC, they're kind of like the Big Ten, Big 12 in the same area of the country, or at least in neighboring regions. And some with some overlap, but you know, there's the Clemson South Carolina game. I'm trying to think of other SEC, ACC. I can't think of what they are right now, but that one pops to my mind. But it almost simultaneously to the ACC releasing its conference schedule, or at least who the teams will play, and then a plus one, that plus one non-conference game was supposed to save those games, that, you know, the Clemson, South Carolina interconference games, if you will. But then simultaneously, the SEC came out and said that it's thinking about going to just 10 conference games. So Power 5 football is a mess. You've got five Power 5 conferences all going in different directions, wanting to do different things during a pandemic. And it's just – it's kind of just creating – you know, anarchy, disarray right now. So who the heck knows what this is going to look like? I'm sure the Big Ten is putting a lot of thought into this and trying to make it as logistically, you know, acceptable as possible, just for the programs, trying to, you know, work in bye weeks in case you have to make up games, in case there are games canceled because of the virus, and teams maybe having a spread within the program and having to shut things down. We saw Iowa's basketball program had to shut down for 14 days after they discovered or came up with two positive COVID tests within the program. So it's going to happen. I mean, the Big Ten football season is not going to go off without any issues. Rutgers has had a problem today. I know I saw a story on that where they had guys go to an on-campus party. So now they've got positive tests. Michigan State's been shut down. Then there have been schools that really have had, you know, Texas came back recently and had a good report. Iowa's done pretty well on the football side. You know, a lot of schools are doing well. It's just you're dealing with college-age kids and you're telling them basically to be in a bubble, what like the NBA or the NHL, and they're not in a bubble. They're 18 to 23-year-old kids who want to go out and do what they want to do. And, you know, it's you want them to all do the best, you know, do the right thing and try to protect the season, but they're also living their lives. So, tough to corral that nationwide and expect that to be a uniform. There's just no governing body for college football. It's just all the conferences for themselves with their own rules, and we'll just kind of see how this falls. But no Big Ten schedule yet. I would expect something. I thought we would have something last week, and then I thought we'd have something by the end of this week. Now we're getting towards the end of this week, tomorrow being Thursday, where we're starting to bleed, starting to move ourselves into August. Saturday's August 1st. So I think something's got to be coming down the pike soon. I've heard, some speculation that they're just going to blow up the whole Big Ten schedule and start from scratch and put the division games at the front end to make sure they get all those in. And then therefore they could, even if games are canceled, they could fit all those division games in and then hopefully get to a Big Ten championship game at the end of the season. Sorry about that. I needed to take a drink. My throat was getting dry. That's the downside of the solo podcast. You can't take a drink when the other person is talking. But yeah, I think, and I had somebody ask who, one of you guys asked who might be the other team on the other side. It's the possibilities are Indiana, Rutgers, Maryland, and Michigan. I really have no feel for how that would go. It's going to be however the Big Ten can put that puzzle together, with already having road games previously scheduled. And if those hold against Penn State and Ohio State, you would think Iowa, and a home game against Michigan State, you would think that Iowa might get Rutgers or Maryland instead of Michigan or Indiana, the two better programs. But we'll kind of see. That would seem more fair if you're trying to balance out a schedule. Let's see here. Kind of skipped up. Let me get to Kenneth Luckstead. We went back and forth on Twitter for a bit this morning. And basically, he had asked a question that I forgot to go back to. And he was wondering why I don't go back to questions that I say I will go research if I don't know the answers to when I'm on the podcast. I try to look ahead at these questions before I broadcast to get an idea. Sometimes some will pop up late on my feed, or ones that I miss for some reason. They haven't used the hashtag HNmail. And I don't know why I didn't go back to your question, or I don't go back. I guess there's nothing sinister here, Kenneth. I'm certainly, when I say that I'm meaning to go back to answer a question, I usually am. Sometimes I forget by the time the next podcast rolls around to do that. I've got people re-ask the questions. It's nothing, you know, like I said, it's nothing intentional. I'm not trying to brush people off or ignore people. It's just I'm 53 and I forget things. So there's no really in-depth answer to that. I know you had asked the question about previously that I had answered, apparently, but you were just more wondering today why I don't go back. I promise you, if people ask me the questions again, or if I happen to write them down, and I'll try to do a better job of that. If there's a question that's asked and I don't know it on the current podcast, I'll try to remember to write it down as soon as I'm done recording, look it up, and get back to the answer the next time. It's nothing intentional, and I apologize to anybody whose questions I may have missed or questions who were asked and I didn't go back and answer after I researched. So there's that. Christoph Trapp, he's got the blue, I get a blue check mark for Christoph Trapp. For those that don't know, some of the youngsters, former Iowa City West offensive lineman and Iowa Hawkeye offensive lineman. He's on Twitter at C-Trapp, C-T-R-A-P-P-E. Christoph Trapp asks, the NFL has allowed individual players to opt out for the season. Is there an equivalent to that in college football, and what are the repercussions or rules around it? Again, like we talked about, I'm not sure that there is, and I may have missed this, and if I did, I apologize. If the NCAA issued a ruling on this, I know at Iowa in the Big Ten, you can opt out and not lose your scholarship. You can maintain your scholarship. I don't know what the rules are in terms of eligibility in that case. If you've already burned a red shirt, if you lose a year, or you would just pick up again next year. I think a lot of these things still need to be worked out based on what ends up happening here. If a season gets canceled, or it's only a 6-game season, or whatever. But I feel confident in saying these guys will not lose their scholarship. I did see. Where did I see that? Before I just started recording, Virginia Tech cornerback Caleb Farley, who's projected to be a first-round pick in the 2021 NFL draft today, opted out. He's going to train for the NFL and has decided, based on seeing some of these NFL guys decide to step away and opt out, he's decided to opt out from Virginia Tech and is just going to get ready for the NFL draft, hoping that, you know, next year is normal and there's a combine and pro day and things like that where he can, make himself, but he's not going to play the season. And I'm sure there'll be other guys. He's the most high profile guy to date. But my guess is there are going to be more guys, more guys that opt out. And student athletes and other sports could do the same. If you're, at high risk, you have relatives that are high risk and you don't want to take that chance. I would think the NCAA would at some point, if they haven't already, jump in and maybe make an overarching rule. But I don't think any school in the country wants to have the type of publicity of pulling a scholarship away from somebody or penalizing them for wanting to opt out during a pandemic. All right, let's see if we've got anything else here. I'm a Hawkeye has a couple of questions here. I think he hit me with three. Let's see. His first question, can you clarify the timeline and response to the DTF report? That's the Diversity Task Force report that was studied in the fall semester of 2018 and returned to Iowa's athletic department early in 2019. And we released the full report on that last Monday, I believe it was. And you can find that on Hawkeye Nation. I believe you have implied you FOIA'd the report and got a 5-page summary. That is correct. Others FOIA'd that report and also got a 5-page summary. As far as I know, publicly, that was the only document that was released for that report from the University of Iowa. And that's also posted on their HawkeyeSports.com, I believe, or either that or the regular Iowa University site. But on the university's, one of the university's official sites, that is posted, the 5-page summary of findings, I think it was called. Only recently did you get the full 9 pages. Was that leaked out to you? Do you think the university acted properly, only giving a 5-page in response to the FOIA? A couple of layers of questions there. I obtained the report not through the university. I will say that. Do I think the university acted properly? When you compare the two reports, I don't think the university wanted the whole report out, or they would have put the whole report out. I don't see why they wouldn't. Obviously, if you read the 5-page summary of findings, it's a much more tame, toned down version of the full 9-page report that was much more in depth, and certainly in my mind when I read it showed a much more deeper look into racial disparity and racial bias in the Iowa athletic department. So it's a lack of transparency. Is it proper for them to do that? I don't know. I would hope that they would be transparent in these cases, but I'm sure certainly they're not probably on an island and trying to do things this way and control the message. You know, if you read the 9-page report, it's obviously a lot of the, you know, the stories or the issues that were, you know, black players came out and talked about publicly on social media last month. They matched up, so to speak. So I guess did the university act properly? I don't know. For me, more than it being public, I thought the university should have done more. And I think Gary Barta and Kirk Ferentz have admitted as much. They should have done more with that report, regardless of what they released to us. They did not do enough, and that's painfully obvious now. I'm a Hawkeye asked his second question. What do you think the general level of trust in the athletic department among fans? My trust is low. Secret Fran extension, lack of transparency with the DTF findings, nepotism seems to default to doing the least they can away with when problems arise. They've not been the best at conflict management, from, you know, dating back to the Rabdo situation, where Barta and Ferentz were not on campus for the first press conference after that, where 13 players were sent to the hospital. You had the James Meyer, Tracy Griesbaum issues. You're right. The Fran McCaffrey contract that was not released publicly and had to be FOIA'd. This situation, they have not been good with public relations and handling sensitive matters. And that's why I'm really interested to see what's going to come back with this external report being done by Hush Blackwell, investigating the racial bias allegations. So interested to see what type of transparency is going to be there, how this situation is handled. Because I think if there's any sense that, you know, there's, I don't know, cover-up's probably too intent, you know, too strong of a word, but if it's seen that some important information is being withheld, I think you could have, you know, players that are not, former players that may not be pleased with what happens here speaking out more. So story is far from being finished and told all the way through. It's going to be interesting to see. You've got general counsel at Iowa involved with this too now. So a lot on the line. And as part of my report last week, I had asked, you know, multiple times about the drug testing, which was alleged by some former players as being unequal in terms of black and white players. And the general counsel actually answered my question on that, saying that the company that they hired to do the drug testing did not keep track of by race. They did not keep track by race of the drug testing. So need to probably file another FOIA on if Iowa kept track on that was brought up in the diversity task force report and then publicly by players last month. So that's something, I think, a question that still has not been answered. Let's see. And then I'm a Hawkeye again with another question here. Any word on Brathwaite? Will he be promoted, outside hire, wait until Hush Blackwell? I think they're probably going to wait for this this report to see if anything comes back on him. He's a guy that worked with Chris Doyle for 15 years in that weight room. Certainly I would like to hear from him, and I think others would as well. And just going back to your last question, I'm a Hawkeye, about how the fans feel about the athletic department, I really don't have a feel for that. I know Bart is not a popular guy. I think Kirk Ferentz is overall a popular guy. I think overall the most of the coaches over there are well regarded by the fan base. But overall, the athletic department, I don't think Gary Barta is somebody that's looked on admirably, somebody who they feel has done a good job. He certainly is very good at raising money. In his tenure there, the facilities continue to be upgraded and are right up with most of the other universities in the conference. So that's kind of his strength. But as we said earlier, public relations are, and handling crises are not his strengths, I would say. And back to Raymond Braithwaite, who's the interim strength coach. I don't know. It's a great question, because this is such an important position in recruiting. Athletes want to know who the strength coach is, who the guy is that's going to develop them physically. So it's definitely something that Iowa needs to get worked out. I really haven't heard one way or the other on this. I think they're waiting for this report to see if he's mentioned in that, or if he's the guy. I'm sure that's something they're still probably working through, but I would think it's something they want to settle sooner rather than later. I think that might be it on Twitter.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It is, and I thank you for the questions on Twitter. Let's hop over to Facebook. Justin Borman, where do we go for tight end? James Carney, Tyler Moore, Carson Williams, wait for 2022. Well, Justin will definitely go for tight ends again in 2022 class. Gunnar Helm, guy that Iowa thought it had a good shot with in this class, committed to Texas this week, so lost out on him. Not a huge surprise there. Sounds like Thomas Fedone, and we've talked about that on across our platform of podcasts. I don't think Iowa's really truly in the picture for him anymore. Thing you never know, and things can change, and I don't know as he's close to a decision yet, but I think Nebraska's leader in the clubhouse comfortably, and somebody's going to have to finish the course strong to be able to overtake it. I think those names that you mentioned are possibilities. I think there are some in-state kids that they could go for as a walk, you know, maybe late scholarship, potential walk-on types. I'm talking about Rafe Hamilton from Iowa City High. Who are some other guys? Andrew Lynch from West Des Moines Dowling. Those guys have all visited here. Rafe Hamilton's the quarterback at City High, but a big kid, really good athlete. Think he might be a developmental project. Alec Palella from Bartlett, Illinois is another kid to keep an eye on. He's got some MAC offers, and I think Iowa likes him a little bit. I don't worry too much about this position, Justin. Sam LaPorta was a late offer, wide receiver mostly in high school. You see what they did with TJ Hockenson, who was a pretty, you know, lightly recruited kid. Iowa has a good knack for identifying talent at this position, whether it's a big receiver they feel like they can morph into a tight end, or maybe just an under the radar tight end. Iowa seems to have a good knack for the tight end position. So I wouldn't say there are any names on the front burner right now, but my guess is they have plenty of names on the back burner, and they're kind of just waiting to see on this. It's going to be hard. They've, you know, LaPorta is only going to be a true sophomore. You got Josiah Myerman in the, you know, that's only going to be a redshirt freshman. And then you've got two true freshmen in Elijah Yelverton and Luke Lachey. So Iowa's tight end room is pretty filled with young players right now. And that's going to make recruiting that much harder at that position. And Justin also asked, what's the percentage you would give on a Sanford commit? And that's Peyton Sanford, a wing for the Waukee basketball team. He's a class of 2021 kid. I would think getting him could help with Omaha. Yeah, Omaha Ballou is going to Waukee next year, so they will be teammates, and that possibly could help. I get a sense with Peyton Sanford that he really wants to see this process through and make sure that he's 100% sure. And I don't get the feel that, you know, Iowa is the school to beat for him. I think Iowa is one of the schools that sits pretty well with him, but I think the recent Stanford offer really changed the game for him. It's an offer that he really wanted. I think he's intrigued about playing out there. He's not a kid that grew up an Iowa fan, and playing at Stanford is an incredible opportunity, both academically and athletically, and in way of life. It's a beautiful part of the country, beautiful campus, and a lot going for it. So I definitely think that Stanford offer hurt Iowa's chances with Peyton, but I still think I don't think he's at the deciding point yet. I think he's still working through the process, and I could be totally off on this. I don't get the sense that he's ready to make a decision, in the near future. Jason Thornton asks, do you think there will be a mass transfers given all the negative publicity the team has gotten recently? I assume Jason is talking about the Iowa football program. I don't see mass transfers now. I think you would have already seen that if that was going to be the case. I think these guys, at least by outward appearances, when we've talked to the six players we have this summer, it seems like they are a tight unit. They give that impression on social media as well. I just think it's a program they're hoping to help push forward. It's a lot of great things that are true about Iowa football and are good about the Iowa football program that they do in that building. It just needs to be a more inclusive environment where people can be themselves. That's not to say it's just going to be, you know, a free for all over there and the coaches are letting guys, you know, for a mental image of, you know, a teacher in a classroom with kids jumping up and down in the desks and throwing things at each other. That's not what they're looking for. They're looking to be treated respectfully and pushed, certainly, and you know, made to be better people and athletes, but done in a way that's respectful and inclusive. And sounds like they're on the way to making that happen, and it's going to be a long process, and hopefully they get there. All right, let's see. We got Tim Herzog. What's the latest news on Luka Garza, if any, given the latest COVID shutdown of Iowa's basketball? It's got to affect his looming decision. Yeah, I tweeted yesterday, Tim, that I thought that just kind of added another layer to his decision-making process. So here's how this works. He can pull out of the draft by August 3rd and say that he's coming back to school. And then he has till August 17th to go back into the draft if he finds out, if he gets information that, you know, changes his mind about coming back to school, he can re-enter the draft by the 17th. So he basically has two weeks. This coming Monday, he's scheduled to make his announcement Sunday, August 2nd, but he has until the 3rd. And then 2 weeks after that, the 17th, he has to go back into the draft if he were to do that. He's been invited to the NBA draft combine, which is kind of, you know, just kind of something that's out there, like in the ether right now, because nothing's been scheduled. We don't even know if there's going to be a draft combine. So there's really not even a decision to make with that. Just very surreal times. And I just hope that the NCAA and the NBA gets together and gives these guys as much information and as long, you know, of a decision timeline that they can make the best decision, because it's a tough time. It's a tough time for those guys to make life decisions. So hopefully the NCAA and the NBA does what's right and equip these guys with the best, most thorough timeline and ability to make the best decision for them. And Clayton Wilcox asked, who is the most important wrestler on this year's upcoming squad? When will Tom Brands run for president? I think he's got a lot of coaching left in him before he makes a run for the White House. So I don't think that's coming anytime soon. And I think he's got a team at Iowa that could go on a little run here. And it's unfortunate because that run could have started this year. But we've been down that road before. Most important wrestler. It's a good question. I'm going to go with Austin DeSanto. And my reasoning behind that, Clayton, is because I think the guy has all the talent necessary to be to be a consistently dominant wrestler. I think when his mind is right and when he's focused, he can be a national champion. There's no doubt in my mind when he's right. And he just has to get to that place where he's right more consistently. He's getting older now. The clock is running on his career. Let's hope he gets to that. But I think he's kind of an X factor. If they could lock him in on a regular basis, man, that just makes them that much stronger. Robert Erie asks, what's the latest on the football schedule, stadium capacity limitations, and tailgating restrictions? We've already addressed the football schedule. Have not heard on stadium capacity. We heard Ohio State go to 20%, I believe, this week, which would put them at around 20,000. And haven't heard anything on tailgating either. I know a few schools, maybe Illinois, I'm not positive though, but I would not expect tailgating on university property this season. If it happens, all the better. That means we're doing better with the virus, and things are looking up. And, you know, I would prepare for there not to be tailgating on campus. Now, that doesn't restrict you from tailgating on private property around Kinnick, but it's also going to be dependent on how many people are left in the stands. If you're looking at 20%, that's what? 17,000, right? My math is terrible, but somewhere in the 15, well, I guess it would be around the 17,5 area in the stadium. But I think even that's probably ambitious at this point, where we stand with where the virus is trending. You could see it kind of like with baseball, where there aren't anybody in the stands other than maybe, you know, for the college level, they may be able to let family in. That I think that would probably, he's talking about what, 100, 120 players for home games. If you gave each player two tickets, plus you're talking about, you know, people that work in the stadium and video crew and all TV and all that other stuff. So We'll just have to wait and see, Robert. I appreciate the questions on that, and hopefully we get some more answers here as we get closer to the season. I would think at this point, as I said, we're getting close to August. Some decisions are going to have to be made here, and maybe those decisions that are made are altered based on what happens here. But, you know, we'll have to see how things shake out and when the football season will even start, and we need a schedule still before we even get to the point where we can know when the season's going to start. It could start in middle September. It could start with that game, you know, at Minnesota, late September. That could be Iowa's first game. Some leagues are pushing up early August. It's going to be a really disjointed, strange, wonky type football season if we get football, and we're just going to have to take what we can get. I've enjoyed watching baseball when I can. It's just nice to see competitive sports, live competitive sports back on the air. We're going to get basketball starting tonight, or no, tomorrow night. Hockey comes back soon, I think this weekend. So it'll be nice having multiple sports to watch again. And hopefully football can figure this thing out. It's got the biggest challenge without question in my mind. You got a lot of people running into each other playing in a confined space. So, and they're not playing in a bubble. So we'll have to see kind of how that shakes out. Haydensley asked, when you did your write-up on the depth chart coming into fall camp, what forms your opinions? For instance, you had Reggie Bracey at the backup for cash position, a true freshman who was just getting to campus. What kind of insights do you have? So Haydensley, some of it is what, and I recommend everybody, I try to, promote local, media members. Mark Morehouse from the Gazette and Scott Docterman from the Athletic have the On Iowa pod. They talk to assistant coaches in the off season. The Hawk Central podcast that's on KXNO with Chad Lystico, Mark Emmert from the Register. They have assistant coaches on, and I always listen to those interviews because I think you can get a lot out of those interviews. Just kind of on where their heads are at a given time and where position coaches and coordinators are at a given time on how they view their roster and their, you know, the players that they have at hand. Reggie Bracey was recruited almost, I want to say with the cash position in mind, because I think he could be a good safety as well, but he really likes the idea of playing cash, and he's got that build. He's very athletic. He's versatile. I think he's a kid that's going to fit well into that position. I think Imani Hooker was the – I don't think. I know that he was the mold for that cash position. Obviously, he was the first one. Started DJ Johnson out there last year. Had trouble finding somebody, and then Dane Belton got healthy, and he turned out to be the guy for that spot. I think Kevon Mayweather can play that spot. It's more of a safety than it is a linebacker, but you need a certain amount of size and strength and, you know, ability to play in the box to play that position. You can't just be, you know, more of a lighter guy that is better in space maybe than in the box. So it's a unique position. And I think Bracey, based on what I've seen with film, based on talking to him, based on listening to coaches, that he is a guy that fits very well into that position. But your overarching question, I listened to those assistant coaches during the off season, things that I've seen with my eyes, things that I've heard beyond that, get an idea of talking with players, towards the end of last season to get an idea of some guys that were coming up behind them. A lot of factors go into it, and some of it's hunch. I won't lie to you. Some of it's more of a hunch. I left Joe Evans off the defensive end depth chart. I think he's going to be in the rotation somewhere. I'm just not sure if he's a three-down guy yet. He may be a guy that's still a specialist. He certainly has a chance to be a three-down guy, and if he does, Iowa's defense is even that much better. And I like Joe a ton. I think he has a chance to be really good. If there was somebody that I felt kind of weird leaving out, it was him. Melrose Hawkins, this will be the last question for the podcast. Is this just for football or any Iowa sports? Oh, the mailbox, it's open for whatever you want, Melrose. You shoot whatever questions you want. You can ask me about tiddlywinks if you want. People still play tiddlywinks? I've always wondered if this Iowa football racial inequality situation bleeds into other Iowa sports, such as affecting recruiting, in particular both men and women's basketball, etc. Is there a collateral damage from the accusations, and with the state of Iowa being a Midwestern state, and what could be perceived less, and what could be completely less diverse? Yeah, I think there are some challenges inherently with being from Iowa and getting people of color to Iowa City. Iowa's done a pretty good job with that for the most part, I think. But it's a challenge, and it's, you know, it has to do with the in-state dynamics too. You don't really have, Des Moines is an all right size city, but it's not even Omaha, really, I don't think. It's not Kansas City. It's not St. Louis. It's not Milwaukee. It's not Minneapolis or St. Paul. So some inherent disadvantages there, you know, from in this region when you're looking at, other, you know, competing programs and universities in the area. I really don't have a feel for if this situation, if this story with Iowa football will bleed over into other sports. I'm sure there'll be questions at times for people, but I think this is pretty football related. Even though that diversity task force report was an athletic department study overall, not the football program. No other program at Iowa has had any claims of racial bias, excuse me, since that report was released. It's all been directed at football. So that's obviously where the main problem is. But if you read that diversity task force report, there certainly is a mindset and a perception in that athletic department that needs to be a little bit more progressive, a little bit more inclusive, and a little bit more aware of what's going on, and being a little bit more accepting, and maybe getting rid of some of stereotypical beliefs. And I'll let you go back and read the diversity report and look at the staff administration section and the way some of the thought process go there, and also with the coaches. So I think there's, as I said earlier, there's still a lot of work to do in that area. And I think they're on the road to making it a more inclusive environment, both in the football program and as an athletic department. And got to keep working on that and being transparent and being open and willing to help and letting people help and educate you to be better in that area. So I appreciate that question, Melrose Hawkins and Haydensley on the Hawkeye Nation message boards. And I appreciate all the Twitter and Facebook questions. That'll do it for another edition of the Hawkeye Nation Mailbag Podcast. This is Rob Howe, publisher of HawkeyeNation.com. Thanking you for joining me, and we'll be back again soon. Hopefully we get this external report back soon, and when we do, Andrew Downs and I will get together for a podcast going over that. But until then, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.